Good evening. Welcome to the first edition of the View from the Bleachers podcast. I am your host, Joe Aiello, and I'm joined by Josh Cornwall and Sean Powell. Guys, how you doing tonight?
Good, Joe. How you doing?
Doing great. Looking forward to the first edition here.
Yeah, I know we've already had one of our listeners or readers email me about it. One of the fan favorites of the site, who is referred to as Caps.
So
give him a shout out real quick. He has already emailed me in anticipation of the first episode and wants to know all about how he's going to be able to read it on his or be able to listen to it on his iPod. So I know he's excited about it. So if nothing else, we'll have one listener at least.
And he's one heck of a listener, so that'll be good.
That's right. So I want to start off tonight's show a little bit, just kind of sharing a little bit about who we are first, and that way hopefully it'll give a chance for the listeners to get to know us a little bit better as the weeks go on. Our plan is to have a show once a week. We try to record it on Monday nights is our goal. That may change, obviously, as the season goes on or what happens with life. But that's the plan right now, is to go Monday nights. Usually 30 to 40 minutes is our projected time allotment. So hopefully it'll be a type of podcast that you can listen to on your way to work or in the gym, you know, whatever is best for you. But hopefully it's not one of those shows that's going to just bog you down and be 4 hours on your iPod. We don't want it to be something like that. Just nice and quick for you. Hopefully as the season gets on, we're going to get a lot more content Cubs-related that's going to be more current than what we have tonight. But, guys, I want to just start a little bit about what we do and who we are and maybe give the listeners a little bit more insight into who they're going to be listening to on a weekly basis. And so I'll start. Hopefully the readers know who I am by now, but if you don't, my name is Joe. I'm actually the person that founded the blog back in 2003, and kind of what I want to share a little bit about is I'm originally from Chicago. I grew up in Chicago. My family still lives there. I moved to North Carolina in 2001, so I'm still able to watch the Cubs. I go to D.C. almost every year to catch them at least one game, but what made me start the blog was back in 2003. That season really hurt me, and I'm sure it hurt you guys too. Just watching it, really thinking that we were going to the World Series and then having that come crashing down. And so I needed an outlet, and blogs were just starting, and that was my outlet. So, you know, ever since then, I've been trying to use this as therapy for getting through my day-to-day Cubs life. And I think it's done well. It's done well for me. I think it's done exactly what I needed it to do, and it allows me to just get my thoughts out there. So, Josh, what about you?
You're making me tear up over here. Like 2003. Man. I am currently living in Boston, although I feel like every time I'm writing for the blog, I'm living somewhere new. I think since I started writing, I was at ESPN, actually in the stats department when I started writing a couple of years ago. Moved to Mississippi, and now I am up on the North Shore of Boston. I'm actually a sports information director full-time for a small school up here in Wenham, Massachusetts. So a lot of my time is preoccupied with writing press releases and updating rosters and statting games and getting to know college athletes. It's a good time. I am at my alma mater, so that's a little bit of an easy transition coming back into a 60 or 70 hour a week job. I'm from Berlin, Connecticut, so really have no – well, I shouldn't say I have no Chicago ties. My uncle – is a professional photographer out in the Chicago area. My first hat ever was actually a Cubs hat. So that's kind of where the love for Chicago Cubs began.
And Sean, what about yourself?
Well, I'm from Tennessee originally, and grew up there and spent most of my early years there. I began writing for the View from the Bleachers blog just this past summer, and it's really my first foray into writing about something that I've loved for many years, and it's been a really awesome, great thing. And I tend to write about one column a week, I guess. How I became a Chicago Cubs fan? Well, I like many people around the country, even though we weren't in the Chicago area or from there, we got WGN. And the Cubs games were on when we got home from school, and we grew up listening to Harry Carey and Steve Stone, and so that's where my love affair with the Cubs started. I finally made it to Wrigley Field, I think, when I was 22 for the first time. And then I actually wound up moving to Illinois. I lived in Illinois for 5 years. I went to grad school there. I went to U of I in Champaign. And then in the last 5.5 years, I've lived down here in Georgia. And I'm, my day job is a professor. I'm a professor of music education at a university down here. But I really love to keep up with the Cubs, and writing on the blog has given me an outlet to really do it in a more serious way. And it combines my love of the Cubs and of writing into one thing, which is great.
You know, I forgot to share what I do for a living. I am actually an insurance agent by trade, and so I spend my day helping people and then helping myself with therapy in the evenings. So I wanted to share a little bit with the listeners a little bit about our vision for the blog. It's our goal to try to put on as much current content as possible, but obviously if you're going weekly, that's a little bit deceiving. So what we're going to try to do tonight, we're going to try to run down a couple of things. The goal is to talk a little bit about the off season so far and what we've seen as spring training is just around the corner. Also, we want to talk a little bit about spring training. We haven't really had a good feel for who's going to be battling for what positions just yet since nobody's taken the field, but we want to try to break that down as much as we can at this point. Maybe talk a little bit about the non-roster invitees. For those people that don't know what that is, we'll try to hit on that a little bit as well. And then also probably play a little bit of a game, just a real cheesy game towards the end. So it should be a good time, and hopefully you guys will enjoy it. Guys, let's get right to it, and let's talk a little bit about the offseason so far. Sean, tell me a little bit about your feelings overall. If you had to grade Jim Hendry, boy.
Careful.
Yes. Well, I tell you, if we had Jim Hendry, we may have a lot more signings this offseason.
Do you want my grade on Jim Hendry? I could give you that one.
No, you know, I just heard him on the score, though, and he had a lot to say about the Cubs and their farm system. But what would you say Theo and Jed's offseason grade so far? Because obviously there could still be things that happen overall. But from this point on, so far to date, if you had to give them a letter grade, what would you say so far your letter grade for them for this offseason would be?
Oh, man, that's really hard. I'm going to get to the grade eventually, but I may have to talk it out a little bit. On one hand, it's been a boring offseason, and it's been kind of a disappointing offseason. I think the two biggest things that we as Cub fans were really tracking and anticipating were the possible signing of Tanaka, which we all know didn't happen, and I'm sure we'll talk about that more in depth. But, you know, for me personally, I was really disappointed. I thought that was something, a rare chance to get a young 25-year-old starting pitcher who had played professional baseball, and you gave up nothing except for money. No prospects, no draft pick. But when you're facing the Yankees and their bank account, I think, you know, I really can't blame these guys. And I do believe they gave an honest effort and an honest offer to try to sign him. And even if the money was even, I'm not sure if Tanaka would have picked to go to the Cubs during a rebuilding phase rather than a more ready-to-win team like the Yankees or Dodgers. I think the other story in the offseason we were looking at was the possible Samardzija trade, which I guess is still out there. And I know the arbitration deadline for him is coming up very soon. A trade may still happen, but it seems like that's died down a lot. And if he's going to be traded, it may be more of a deadline deal like Garza was last year. So I think if we were looking for any kind of excitement or moves that are really going to make the team better or get fans excited, I mean, it's an F. On the other hand, if you actually look at what moves were out there to be made, whether they be free agent signings or trades, I'm not sure that any of those moves would have been a smart thing for the Cubs right now. I mean, obviously, the plan, whether you like it or not, is to really build up the farm system and sort of wait for some of these prospects to be ready to contribute and then, you know, make moves where you're buying more than selling to really make the team better. So I'm not sure at this point, seeing as 2014, the team is really not going to be very competitive, if it would have made any sense to go out there and spend big money on a free agent or something just to appease the fans or the media or whoever. So I have to give them, you know, maybe a B+, A- in the fact that, you know, you can disagree with the plan, but it seems like they're sticking to it and they're not bowing to public pressure to do something to sell tickets or get media off their back. So I'm glad they didn't do any of the flash-in-the-pan signings that possibly the previous regimes had done.
Josh, do you agree or disagree?
I agree. I kind of look at the off season in terms of the grand spectrum of Major League Baseball this year as the Cano signing period and then the Tanaka signing period. And everything else is just kind of in between. They were, I guess the Prince Fielder trade was kind of a big thing too, but that happened so early on and kind of had that shock factor that there really weren't a lot of, I don't know, guys that we thought would be pegged into what the Cubs are trying to do and building their, through the minor leagues, I guess I would say. I don't know. There just wasn't a lot of interest in middle of the road guys like they've had in the past. I guess looking for people that like a Scott Baker last year who was coming off of an injury, or a Feldman. And so signing Jason Hamill last week kind of fit into that of what Theo was trying to do. But I understand the frustration because this is what, year three under Theo? Am I missing a year?
Yeah, coming up on year three.
This is year three. And so we keep talking about the payroll of all these big teams of your Red Sox and your Yankees and all these other big market teams. And fans are starting to say, what are we going to ever spend this money? And they keep saying, well, be patient. But I can kind of understand a little bit of the angst. Well, we have the young players now. We have one of the best groups of young players coming up through the system. Now we need to supplement that with young-ish free agents.
Yeah, I agree with both of you guys. My frustration this year is twofold. One is off the field completely. I am frustrated with the fact that with the issues with the rooftop owners, it just seems like over the last week or two that's really kind of come to a head, and it almost seems as if it's gone to a head because of the fact that the contract was kind of leaked out there by David Kaplan, and fans got to see a little bit about what the verbiage in that contract was, and now all of a sudden the Cubs have decided, okay, we're going to apply for permits, we're going to start putting shovels in the ground here and just let the lawsuit come if it needs to. They have had that contract from the day that they bought this team, and so to not just all of a sudden, you know, come to a head and say, we're going to do this no matter what the rooftop owners have said, I think is a bit irresponsible, in my opinion. If you know you're going to go to arbitration no matter what, why not take that chance early on in the process? Because at that point, we could have seen some renovations over the course of this offseason, as opposed to now where we've got to wait until at least next offseason before shovels hit the ground, and that's frustrating to me. The other frustration that I had, kind of Sean echoing what you said, not really, there really wasn't anybody to go out there and get, but my frustration was the lack of, it seems, a clear vision on what to do with Jeff Samardzija. It seems like this front office is very much wishy-washy in terms of, do we want him as a part of our rotation going forward, or do we want to move him, or do we want him as part of our rotation, or do we want to move him? It doesn't seem like they have a clear direction, because if you have a clear direction, make him the offer you need to do and get him signed. If you don't have a clear plan, then, you know, move him, because there's clearly interest from him outside, so just make a move.
That kind of leads to the question. Oh, go ahead, Sean.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Joe, I agree with you on the rooftop thing, and I think I think probably reading the tea leaves, I don't know, but I think Ricketts probably wanted to just try to get this done with everybody's blessing and stamp and everybody hugging and singing together with no negative PR from anyone. Probably ill-advised to wait that long to try to get that done. So I guess I'm interpreting this as he's tried that as long as he can, and then now he's going to move on. Well, I guess we'll see what happens. And for Shark, I understand exactly what you mean, but looking at how Theo, I think he operates, I think he probably has an exact way he wants to handle Shark, but neither of them are working right now. I think he wants to sign Shark if the contract is right and is valuable, and he gets value from the contract. Shark is demanding more than Theo thinks value will be gained from. And on the other hand, I think they would trade him if they got the package back in a trade that got value, and I don't think they've gotten that offer. So I think he has two scenarios where on one hand he'll sign Shark, and the other he'll trade them. But I don't think his number on either side has been met. And as analytical as Theo is, I think he's just not going to do it just to get it done. I think he's going to have one of his metrics matched before he has, you know, before his hand is forced by a deadline or some other way.
Right. And I agree with you. It's just, I think as a Cubs fan, people get frustrated because they want to see clear direction and they can't see the back office portion of the dealings. So they don't know what's out there. All we know is what the media is reporting. And sometimes I think that that gets frustrating for fans. I understand how it works. I understand what you're trying to accomplish. But I think from a fan standpoint, you're going to see people frustrated with a clear, what they think is a clear lack of direction. And so I think that that could be frustrating for people. So now if we're going to look forward, we look at the spring training roster and kind of what that looks like and what this team is shaking out to be for 2014. I wanted to kind of touch on a little bit, guys, just what you were thinking in terms of the roster as a whole. I did a little bit of a once-over it the other night, and I'll be honest with you, I was a little discouraged at what I saw. I was just basically taking a look at – usually when you're looking at guys that are on the non-roster invitee list, you can kind of look through the list and say, okay, I see where they're going here, or I know what the upside of this player is. But as I looked over the non-roster invitee list, I really saw it break down into two categories, and I don't know if you guys agree or not, but it seems to break down to guys that are potential future players, you know, your guys like Javier Baez, Chris Bryant, guys like that. And then you've got guys that are pretty much just fighting for a job that really probably this year have no chance at winning a job. You know, guys like Mitch Meyer, Casper Wells, just there were guys that I was listing on the non-roster invitee list in my spreadsheet that I didn't actually know who they were. So was there anybody listed on the non-roster invitee list? I think there's a total of 27 guys that are non-roster invites that stood out to you, a couple of guys. Josh, if you want to start, and then Sean, give us a little bit about who you noticed that maybe stands out to you.
Well, you have to separate it, I think, into the young guys and the seasoned veterans, so to speak. The three names that pop right off the list to me that are older guys, well, I shouldn't even say older, but older in terms of MLB experience are Chris Coughlin, Ryan Kalish, and Ryan Roberts. I don't know if any of those guys actually make the roster. I could see probably one of the three at least making the roster, probably one of the outfielders, Coughlin or Kalish, making it as a utility guy. But again, these are all pretty much unguaranteed contracts, just signed for a minor league for the season, I guess. I'm sorry, I'm stumbling over my words here. Coughlin and Kalish are both relatively young. I know Coughlin's, what, 30? Not even that. 29, and Kalish is 25. And then Ryan Roberts, obviously, being the oldest, but having the most plate appearances out of the three guys. I just don't know how the infield's going to shake out, so I don't know how Roberts fits in there. And outfield is just wide open because pretty much everybody out in the outfield is just kind of holding place until guys like Almora come up through the system.
Yeah, for me, you know, I feel the same way as you do, Joe. It's not a list of names that it's going to get you really excited. A lot of cast-offs and some young guys too, but no one that's been a top prospect recently or is a veteran coming in that's had a big career. Honestly, I don't see very many, if any, of the non-roster guys making the team out of spring training. I mean, there always are these surprises. You always have the Joe Mather type guys that come out and hit like 600 during spring training and then that's all they do all year. I don't know. A guy like Darnell McDonald has been with the team for a while, who's a veteran guy. The team is going to be so young with so many inexperienced players and some players playing out of position possibly. And the Cubs have, I've read that they think of McDonald as someone who's almost like a coach on the field type guy who may even stay with the organization in some sort of coaching or teaching capacity after his playing career is over. So they may want to have a guy like that on the club just for something like that. You know, I don't know how much Rick Renneria values things like that, if at all. And if it's between him and Vitters, I'm sure we'll talk about these guys later, but if it's between him and Vitters, I'd rather just roll the dice and see what the young kid has rather than having a guy to coach up the youngsters. You know, I'm not sure how valuable that is.
And McDowell is 36, which is pretty old for a center fielder slash left fielder.
Right.
Yeah, I would think – I think there's definitely an off-field spot that's available, that fifth outfield spot. You figure you can pencil Junior Lake in there. You can pencil Ruggiano. You can pencil Sheerholtz and Sweeney in there. And that kind of leaves room for one more outfielder, whether that's Josh Vitters, like you said, or maybe Darnell McDonald. Personally, I think if I was going to take one other outfielder, I might take Mitch Meyer. You know, I think he's got more versatility than some of those guys. I think he might be a better option. The two guys that are intriguing to me, I tend to gravitate towards pitchers. And so I think the two guys that are most intriguing to me are Kyle Hendricks, although I don't think he's quite ready to make the team out of spring training, but I wrote about it today. I think you'll see him at some point make some starts this year. And then James McDonald. I think you could see James McDonald make an impact in this bullpen if he can make this team. You know, there were times against us that he looked really good when he was pitching for the Pirates. So I think James McDonald's an interesting name to pay attention to. But it'll be curious to see. Usually we'll see at least one non-roster guy make this team year in and year out, and so it's just a matter of who makes the team. But, you know, I don't think fans need to get too excited about some of the players like Baez or Bryant, Elmora. Those guys are pretty much just up so that the Cubs can get a look at them, so that they can get a look in big league camp and what that means since they're so close. And so I think that you'll see those guys stick with the club for a little while and then get optioned down. But I think it's going to be interesting. I'm kind of gravitating towards Meyer and then also Hendricks and McDonald. Moving along with the spring training things, one of the things that is one of the hot topics, in addition to who's going to be that last outfield spot, is who's going to be starting at third base. And so I kind of wanted to phrase it two ways. One is, who would you like to see to be the starting third baseman come opening day, and who will be the starting third baseman come opening day? So, Josh, why don't you start us off?
Oh, gosh. That spot has been so unsettled for the last 3 years. I think Valbuena by default gets it just because he's played well at times. He's made good enough plays at third base. He's also had a couple of costly errors. And the stick, as inconsistent as it is, it's better than a lot of options on the 40-man roster right now. Ideally, I'd love Mike Holt to be great this year. I mean, he was so good 2 years ago, and then the whole eye thing happened and a couple of other kind of strange injuries. Down the road, I mean, at least in May or June, I'd love to see Mike Holt starting, but I just don't know what he's bringing to the table right now, because there's so much varying reports from different sources, both out of the Texas organization and out of the Cubs organization. That's probably my answer right now. I would say Valbuena, but ideally Holt by the end of the season.
Sean, what about you?
Yeah, well, I think everyone is hoping that Holt has figured out the issues he's had. I mean, it's been explained that he had eye problems and that those have been corrected. So I think a lot of us are dreaming on Holt, who can return to his top 50 prospect in baseball form. I think that's really wishful thinking, because to expect a guy who's had the issues, even if they were just the eye issues and even if they were corrected, to him to just all of a sudden be back to where he was seems like a long shot. So I think we all want Holt to be the guy, but I just don't see it, especially right out of the gate. You know, he may take a few more months in the minors to get some regular at-bats, and maybe if he, you know, is feeling good and hitting well, that'll be the guy. I think he'll have to tear up spring training to really be it, unless they just want to throw him out there and just see what he has. So that's who I would like. I think it's probably going to be the Valbuena Murphy platoon. And actually, if you look at the numbers last year, that platoon actually was they pieced together a pretty good third baseman out of those two guys. The offensive numbers and the defense numbers were pretty good actually last year, surprisingly. Another guy who would be intriguing would be Christian, Villanueva. He's a pretty highly regarded prospect, supposed to be a good defender, decent bat. So, he's another guy you can throw into the mix. And if he has a great spring training and he's head and shoulders above the other guys, He could be the dark horse in that. And I really think that the third base job may impact second base, because I think my prediction is if Ault does take over third, you may see that Murphy Valbuena platoon shift over to second, which means Barney is, I don't know what he is then, expendable. I guess you could say trade Barney. I don't know what you're getting for Barney, but if they
not
had a
much.
Designated fielder, you could get the ton, but you don't have that. But I think that might be what the Cubs would want to see is that Ault at third, Valbuena Murphy platoon at second, and Barney kind of the odd man out. But I actually don't think that's going to happen, at least right out of the gate.
It's kind of funny that they have like a quote-unquote logjam at third base, but really no one good enough to be a starter at third base.
Yeah, it's just a whole bunch of logjam of really not good, basically. I'm going to go in a little bit different direction than you did, Sean. I'm actually going to say my ideal, who I'd love to see win the job at third base, and I know he won't, but I would love to see Vitters win the job at third base, and I'll tell you why. If Vitters wins the job as the fifth outfielder or fourth outfielder position, you can essentially kiss his major league starter in this league career goodbye. You're not going to get the number of at-bats that you're going to need as a fourth or fifth outfielder to do that. And I think that all of a sudden we're basically just saying, hey, you've had your chance. Yes, you were a number one or first round pick, but we're basically writing you off, relegating you to backup duty. Whereas I think Mike Ault still has some value. You know, if he can do anything, even if it was in AAA to start the year, and Vitters is shining, you can trade Ault, whereas I don't think you could trade Vitters. So my ideal would be for Vitters to win that job. I think, going back to what you said, I think if Ault does win the job, or Vitters wins the job, or whoever wins that job at third base, I don't know that you can just push Barney off of second base by default. I think Barney has to lose that job just because of the defense that he brings. Now, I wrote numerous times that I'm not a big Darwin Barney fan. I think that even his defense is not enough to make up for his poor offense last year. But I think the Cubs believe in Barney, and I think that they wouldn't just simply move him in favor of a Donnie Murphy or Luis Valbuena platoon. I think they would give Barney each and every opportunity to lose that job before they took it from him. Would you guys agree or disagree on that? This is where we need the cricket sound.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Last year was just so bad. And it's hard to forget that when you're building something new. And that's essentially what the Cubs are doing. They're kind of rebranding themselves in a sense. And Barney's a part of that, not even past regime, but his best season was what, Theo's first year, and our right before Theo came.
Yeah, it's a tough call. It's a tough call because we've seen Barney play well enough to essentially win a Gold Glove, and then we've seen him play poor enough to be below league average replacement level overall. And so it's we've seen good and we've seen bad, and you really don't know what you're going to get.
You know, honestly, I think if the infield really is a year away probably from having, except for Rizzo and maybe Castro, that's another discussion, of being brand new. Because I think Baez and Alcantara are on the way. And I actually think, barring something crazy, that they'll be in the lineup in 2015, both of them, one at third and one at second. So I guess I'm predicting that Baez is going to be either at short or third, and Alcantara is going to be at second. I think I would love to see that at least maybe I'm just hoping that that's going to be the case. So honestly, I don't know if the guys care about these three guys. I mean, Barney, Valbuena, you know, they're not going to be part of the future of this team. And if they are, I think it's going to be a pretty dismal future. So they'll probably just let it sort out, and they'll probably dangle these guys in the trade market and just trade whoever has the highest value for anybody at a given time, and probably not have any second thoughts about it. That's my prediction, but who knows?
Another kind of not realistic hypothetical, but what if both Alcantara and, oh my goodness, and Baez both have insane spring trainings, and the Cubs decide, let's take a chance. I know this is not going to happen, but what do they do then? with the guys they have on the roster.
Yeah, I think you've got to let Alcantara sit in the minors a little bit at that point because he's not as highly touted as Baez. But I think they're going to be patient with Baez. I don't think that they're going to rush him, even if he has a lights out spring training. Now, that could be a different story if come April and part of May he's still having an Anthony Rizzo AAA type season. But I think what we've seen is they made no secret that they felt like they rushed, some of the players a little bit along, Brett Jackson for one in his development. And so I think you'll see them be patient, especially with the fact that these guys are the future and they cannot afford for them to fail or give fans any doubt that they're going to succeed. Otherwise there could be a lot of backlash as a result. So I don't think you see Baez make this team out of the spring training, and I don't think you see Alcantara at all.
Yeah, and beyond the developmental concerns, which I agree with 100%, is if you wait a few months, I don't remember the exact date, you get a whole other year of control under his current contract. So if he broke camp with the team, you would lose a whole year of control, which they're not going to do. So if he's just killing it and there's no doubt he's ready, maybe a June call up like Rizzo 2 years ago. But I actually don't think you'll see Baez or Bryant or Alcantara for that matter until September. But I do think you probably will see them in September, and I think all three guys have a shot at the 15 starting lineup.
Well, moving forward a little bit, guys, let's kind of end the show with a little bit of a cheesy game. I mentioned it and kind of previewed it a little bit earlier in the podcast, but we are going to kind of do a little bit of a play on some of the games that you've seen on whatever it is, Pardon the Interruption or Mike and Mike. Everybody's doing it, and so we figure we may as well too. And so instead of playing Love It or Shove It like they have on Mike or Mike or Buy or Sell, we're going to play Like It or Strike It. So if you are buying what I'm selling here, you're simply going to say that you like this and maybe give a short little reason why. Or if you think that what I'm saying is complete garbage, then you're going to strike it and maybe share a little bit about what we do there. And each show, what we'll do is we'll try to have five topics. Four of them will be cuz related and one will be completely random. And I will try not to prep you guys in advance to give us as much off the cuff thinking as possible. So, but I'll try to be kind in terms of what I choose. So let's get started. I'm going to start with you, Sean. So question number one, Anthony Rizzo will hit 280 or more in terms of batting average in 2014. Like it or strike it?
Strike it, and it doesn't matter because batting average is dumb.
Oh, boy. Jetty is going to be listening and loving this podcast.
He'll have a good OPS, good power numbers, good ISO, so I don't care.
Josh, like it or strike it?
Strike it. I think he'll probably fall around the 260, 265 range. But like Sean said, high OBP, high OPS, and that's good enough for me.
Okay. Question number two, and I guess I should probably answer my own question. I'm gonna like it, actually. I think we're gonna see some adjustments from Rizzo this year, and I think you're gonna like the product that you got. When he came up last year, in 2012 in a half season, we saw him hit 285, and I think he'll be back to that range this year. I don't think he'll be much over 280, but I think he'll be right around that range, and so I'm gonna like that one. Question number two, and this one's more current. We will see no arbitration cases actually go before an arbiter for the Cubs in 2014. Like it or strike it, Josh?
Like it, and I have no possible reason for thinking that other than being positive.
And to give clarification to the listeners, we've got two cases still outstanding, Darwin Barney and Jeff Samardzija. So in order for them to avoid arbitration, they need to at least agree on a one-year deal before their cases are scheduled to be heard. I believe that Jeff Samardzija's case is scheduled to be heard on the 10th, and I have not seen anything in terms of when Barney is scheduled, but both of them you figure should be within the next week or so.
Burning the midnight oil.
Yes. Sean, what about you?
I like it. Theo Jed's MO in the past has been to not go to arbitration, and I think they agreed with Garza like the night before, so I don't think it's going to go to arbitration.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I think we tend to see the Cubs not go to arbitration. We saw them go to arbitration with Terrio a while back, and that never ends well. So, you know, they had a long history for a while of not going to arbitration. I think that'll continue this year, and I'm going to like it as well.
Didn't they go to arbitration with Mark Grace once?
Yes, I think that was the last case before Terrio, I believe.
Right. Yeah, I just remember that the team has to tell the player why they're not good, which is
right.
not a good thing.
Exactly.
For the
and that's kind of what you're getting at, because it's my understanding that the procedure is you are both sitting there at the table making your case to the arbiter, and so as a general manager or as a front office professional, you're basically doing exactly what you said. This player is not good. We want him on our team, but he's not good, so you need to side with us. And so that's just – it's a tough thing to swallow if you're the player and the front office, and so I think teams tend to avoid it if they can. Question number three. Javier Baez will be playing shortstop by year end in 2014. Like it or strike it, Sean?
Oh, I'm going to strike it for 14. I do think he gets a September call-up, but I don't think they move Castro off short this year. I think if that's going to happen, and it'll wait till 15.
And Josh?
I'm going to have to agree. If he does come up, it's going to be spot duty. summer's not going to be pretty, so September is looking pretty good for a couple of the young guys to come up, but at least get maybe 100 at-bats or so in the final month of the season. But it'll probably be working in at short, but also at third base.
Okay, I'm gonna like it actually. I'm gonna just kind of go against the grain from you guys tonight, and I'm gonna say that he will at least by September 1st, we will have seen 15 starts from Javier Baez at short.
Wow.
So that's my bold prediction there. I don't know if that's necessarily due to poor play from Castro or poor play from somewhere else in the infield, or just an overall injury to somebody. But I think we'll see Javier Baez with at least 15 starts by September 1st in 2014 at shortstop.
Wow.
Question number four. The Cubs will be a 500 or better team in 2014. Like it or strike it, Sean?
Strike it multiple times. No way. they're going to be awful. Yeah,
worse than
last year. Because think about last year, no Soriano, no Garza. I mean,
I agree in the sense that no Soriano, no Garza, because it's hard to argue with fact. But I'm going to disagree in the sense that when you look at some of the guys, Rizzo was terrible last year. He can't possibly be that bad this year. You've got Casher, who was terrible last year. He can't possibly be that bad this year. So I don't think that they're going to be as bad as you think. I'm going to strike it, but boy, everything in me kind of wants to like it. What about you, Josh?
I'm striking it. You look at the roster, it looks like a team that's bottom five in the league, and they'll play like a team that's bottom five in the league.
Okay. And last question, this one is completely un-Cubs related, but like it or strike it, Bruno Mars, best Super Bowl performance in the last 10 years. Josh, why don't you start us off?
I don't really pay attention to the halftime show. I certainly didn't do it last night with how bad that game was. I did catch a little bit because my wife was watching it at a party. I think he's talented in terms of entertainment value. I'm not necessarily love his music, although my mom was. She was so excited about Bruno Mars coming on. I can't remember who would be better than him, but he's got to be up there in the last 10 years.
And Sean?
You know, it was okay. I respect Bruno's musicianship, and the drum solo thing was cool. The Chili Peppers, that was a train wreck. They shouldn't have done that.
Oh, terrible.
And by the way, you know, I used to, a long time ago, old Chili Peppers I liked. The newer stuff is terrible, but if you've seen the thing out, like Flea and the guitar guy, the new guy, their instruments weren't even plugged in.
So I didn't see that.
they could have at least like faked that they were playing, you know. But Bruno, I think he's really singing and he's playing drums, so it's pretty good. But as a music ed teacher, if it's not a marching band at halftime, I don't want to see it.
Well, you probably really enjoyed the national anthem then.
I liked the singing was amazing. The arrangement was not good. I want to hear that great singer with just the straight up national anthem. No
yeah.
weird like meter changes or anything. Just sing the song. So it was half good, I guess.
Right. I'm going to actually strike it. Although I did enjoy Bruno Mars. I'll be honest with you. Within the last 6 months, if you would have told me Bruno Mars was playing the halftime show, I would not have known who that was. But I was amused at just his overall showmanship. I thought he put on a good he had good stage presence. I had no idea that he also played the drums. I don't know if you guys caught that, but he was rocking out on the drums to start the performance. And I enjoyed what I heard. With you, Josh, I thought that adding the Red Hot Chili Peppers was a little weird. They're just kind of greasy and slimy and just weird. So I thought that was a little bit odd. I'll be honest with you. I would really love to go back to just having older groups. Not Beatles old, but groups like a Tom Petty or a Prince, people like that. I think those are more wide range of audience, and I think you're going to see the young people, you know, gravitate to the Super Bowl no matter what. And so I think you got to kind of begin to pull in your older audience, whereas your older folks are going to be more likely to tune it out if you see Bruno Mars on there or Beyonce or guys like that. So I think I'm going to strike it, but I did enjoy the show, and I thought it was probably the highlight of the night compared to the game. So
07 through 09, yeah, the terrible game. 07 through 09, they actually had a pretty good run with artists because Prince, Tom Petty, and then Bruce Springsteen.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, it's been The Who trying to make a comeback, and that was just miserable. The Black Eyed Peas, Usher.
That was brutal. Yeah.
LMFAO.
I don't remember Usher playing.
Train wreck. He was like the undercard to the Black Eyed Peas.
Okay, see, I didn't watch that one. We turned it off, and we ended up watching something else during halftime, and that's probably why I don't. But I do like Usher. I think I would have enjoyed that one. But, yeah, I think Prince has probably been my favorite over the last few years. And then obviously nothing can top the Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake Super Bowl halftime show.
Later.
Yes. So I think that was a good addition of Like It or Strike It. We'll have to do that again. Before we let everyone go, I want to let everyone know, we would love to get listener feedback, whether it's comments or questions. Maybe there's some questions that you'd like for us to address in the next show. You can view the podcast, obviously, on the website. Feel free to leave comments in that post. But if you want to reach us via email, you can reach me at viewfromthebleachers@gmail.com. That's viewfromthebleachers@gmail.com. Feel free to just email questions for the show. Just put in their podcast question or something to that effect. You can also follow us on Twitter. Our handle for the blog, which is basically me tweeting, is @VFTB. That's View from the Bleachers acronym there. And Josh and Sean, where can they find you guys?
I'm on Twitter @JCStats.
And I am Powell_Sean, and Sean is S-E-A-N. So Powell_Sean.
So Powell_Scene is basically where you find.
Yes, it's the Irish spelling.
Well, that'll do it for the first show. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Guys, I've had fun. I look forward to hopefully many more shows down the road, I think we'll need to kind of keep track of the Like It or Strike It predictions and things like that, and just kind of see how we do, maybe revisit those. If one of us says something completely stupid, maybe we'll need to bring that back for future shows.
Sounds good.
Absolutely.
Well, for Josh and Sean, I'm Joe. We've enjoyed having you guys, and hopefully you've enjoyed the show, and we'll see you next Monday.